I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist, and welcome to Teach Me to Talk, the podcast. It's easy when things are going well with a child's development for a parent to be able to use books as a way to teach language to help a child learn how to understand what words mean and how to say words. But for kids with language delays, it's not so easy for parents. So that's what we're going to be talking about in today's show, how to make books better for toddlers and preschoolers with language delays. Now, this is going to be a two-part series, and today we're going to be talking about strategies for children who are still in that 6 to 18-month developmental range. This also includes strategies for children with diagnoses like autism or like apraxia or even a diagnosis like a global developmental delay where there are delays across the board in every developmental domain. So I'm so excited to get to share these strategies with you today. So let's start by saying that if you are a therapist, you can get 1 hour of CE credit for this show for only $5, and you can look for information about that in the link or in the post below with the link there. And if you're a parent, let me just say that I've got so much information for you just packed in this show. So don't get turned off by the fact that this is a CE credit course for therapists. You're going to be able to learn a lot too that you can apply today with your own child with a language delay to make books better. All right, so let's start out by talking about some common problems that we see with children that really prevent parents from being able to effectively use books with their children as a teaching tool. The first one is pretty easy to identify once you know what it is, and it's a child who's using a book just for self-stimulatory purposes. So what does self-stimulation mean? It means that that child is doing something for himself that he gets a charge out of, or a little buzz, as I like to say. So when kids are like this, when they're using books in a self-stimulatory way, they're really just flipping through the pictures with very little regard for what's there. And so if you're a parent, you might notice, and I don't have a great book to demo this with, but you might notice that they just fan the pictures very quickly, or maybe they even flip the pages really quickly. And again, if you're, you may not have thought about that before as being a problem, but you certainly might characterize it as, well, he just likes his books, that's just the way that he likes to do it. But we know as professionals that, again, that what a child is really doing when he's looking at a book that way or exploring a book that way, there's no real language learning going on then, because he's really just getting that visual feedback. Or maybe it's an auditory kind of bump for him or feedback for him. Maybe he likes the sound that the pages make. We don't know until he's able to talk and tell us when he's older. But that's a real real barrier for some children, because they're using that book in a self-stimulatory way, and a parent doesn't know how to get in there and change that pattern and make that any different. And so they look at books, they might say that my child really likes books, but they're not really understanding that that child isn't really learning any language. Language is an auditory system. We learn language by listening to someone else tell us what we're looking at, or someone else read us a story. And so when a child is just getting, again, that visual feedback or that visual stimulation from using a book in that way, we have to explain to a parent that might be what he likes to do, and that might be something that you choose to continue to let him do because it's something that he enjoys, but at the same time, he's really not learning anything from looking at a book that way, language-wise, that is. All right, so let's look at the second common problem with a book. This is when kids want total control of the book, meaning that you try to read the book with them and they are so fixated on holding the book that what happens with a lot of parents? They just give up. They just walk away. They say he's not ready, or he's not into books, or he's going to be like me, not a big reader, or something. They say, they just say something that really doesn't address what's going on, and it's that child, again, hasn't learned to share that experience. So there's probably a lack of joint attention going on. Or it could be that a child, again, is maintaining total control of the book when he's very purposefully pushing someone else away, saying, I don't want you to do this with me. This is just something that I'm doing on my own. And again, all of us need times where we enjoy being by ourselves. But for a child with a language delay, that's not helping him. That's not that we don't need to leave a parent in that position where they just throw their hands up and walk away and say, well, he's just not ready, or he's just not enjoying books yet, or again, whatever else they say to themselves. So we have to talk about why that's not a good idea. And again, work on that joint attention piece and on sharing experiences so that child is able to learn from books in the rich way that we want him to. All right, so let's look at the third problem that we see sometimes with toddlers and preschoolers with language delays with books, is that it looks like they have no interest in books whatsoever. Now, lots of times these kids are really great players. They like toys, and so they would much rather play with a set of toys than a book. And I get that. But at the same time, we want them to develop these pre-literacy skills and these early literacy skills that will carry them on as they get older and begin preschool and begin their early elementary school experiences. And we want them to love books and be able to learn from books. And again, when it looks like they have no interest in books, we have to meet them where they are and figure out what's going on with that. Are we using books that are really at a level that's too high developmentally? Are we not modifying how we present the information in the book so that the child is able to really understand the book and then participate better? So we have to look at that child and figure out what's going on. When we say that a child has no interest in books, again, we don't need to let parents leave him there. We've got to help them see how we can make that a fun experience for both of them so that child, again, is able to use language and use books to help him learn what words mean and then to say words and use words to communicate. A fourth problem is one that we see often with kids who are very, very young, and certainly with kids who have learning differences, and this is a super short attention span. Now, let's talk about short attention spans and kind of put it into perspective. It is the typical or the milestone that we use for this is that a toddler should be able to attend to an activity with an adult for 3 to 6 or attend to an activity for 3 to 6 minutes alone. And after that, he's going to need some adult interaction to help him stay on track and help him want to go beyond that. Now, we certainly know that there are toddlers who have wonderful attention spans that go well beyond that. And you certainly know that there are kids with that kind of fixated attention span that could watch a screen for 4 or 5 hours and not budge. We're not talking about kids with that fixated attention either, but we're talking about kids who have that just normal, typical average attention span, which is that 3 to 6 minutes. And so when we say super short attention span, we're talking about kids who can't sit through an entire book. Maybe we're trying to show them a page or two and then they are up and off. And so with those kinds of kids too, that's a real barrier to using books, and their literacy skills are also probably as delayed as their language skills. And so we certainly want to think about that and think about how we can make that better for those kids with some adjustments and some modifications that we will do and that we're going to talk about in today's show. Now, this fifth thing that we're going to talk about is not necessarily a problem, but it's certainly worth mentioning, and it's certainly worth you thinking about as a therapist who works in early intervention and with preschool. It's with kids who love books but don't love anything else. And a lot of times these are kids who also love books and love screens. So again, what are we saying about those kids? They prefer visual information over auditory information. And remember, for those of you who are parents, auditory just means what you hear, and we've already talked about language is based on your auditory skills, how well you're able to hear and process information. And so for kids that have a lot of visual learning preferences, meaning what do they like to do? They like to look at books. They like to watch videos on their mom's phone. They like to watch their little shows on TV at home in the family room. They want the TV on all the time and they're just glued to it. For those kinds of kids, it again, not necessarily a problem with books. Books are their learning strength, but we need to think about how we can use those strengths to really, really help address their weaknesses. So for those kinds of kids who do have language delays and who do, again, prefer to learn visually, we have to help them with a bridge that we're going to talk about by using books. So for some of those kids, like even as a parent, if you're thinking, well, this show doesn't really apply to me because my child likes books already, hallelujah. We can use that. That's a strength. So I'm sure you're still going to be able to get some strategies that you can use with your own child too. All right, so let's move on now and talk about what are the milestones for early literacy skills for children who are in this developmental period. And if you purchase the CE credit for this course, you'll get this handout. And again, you can check out these milestones here. I've divided it into two age ranges. So the first half of this would be 6 to 12 months old, and then 12 to 18 months old. And if you look at these literacy skills as an SLP or another, maybe a developmental interventionist or an early instructor or special instructor, whatever they call a teacher that's been trained just with general education and who also participates in seeing children with language delays in this through an early intervention program, a state program, or maybe a public preschool program. These kinds of language milestones really pair nicely with the literacy milestones. So I'm sharing this as maybe the first time that a teacher has thought about how nicely they pair together. And as an SLP, I want to remind you of what these language milestones are so that you can see, again, how they are so interconnected with these early literacy skills. And as a parent, you may hear some of these things and think, I didn't think about that as a literacy skill. I didn't think about that as pre-reading, but it certainly is. And so it starts at the beginning. You know, pre-reading doesn't start just when your child shows up for the first day of kindergarten. It starts long before that in infancy, just like everything else. So let's look at what these early literacy milestones are, and I'll direct your attention to your handout if you've already gotten that. So first of all, a child by 6 months, certainly we want them holding their head steady. And why is that important? Because to be able to look at a book, they're going to need their head to be under their control and not with lower muscle tone or with a lack of coordination or whatever has happened. You know, we need a child to be able to hold his head steady. So that certainly is the very first early literacy skill. The second one is sits in lap without support. And so if a parent is really constantly trying to arrange a child or reposition a child so that he or she, again, has the most comfortable position, or they're visually attentive, they can see the book, but they're not uncomfortable, they're not squirming around, they're not crying and upset because their body is not in a position that's peaceful and relaxed and ready to learn. So that's certainly something with kids too. Now, lots of times we as therapists think about, and we're going to talk about positioning. Let me just save that thought. So let's just... That's a milestone, is being able to sit in a parent's lap without support so that a parent can hold a child and read like this. And that's the most traditional way. And again, sometimes we as therapists try to do some different things with positioning, which works sometimes and sometimes they don't. And if we think about that early regulatory, just, again, comfort is the best word that I can think of there, but the body-on-body contact is so regulating for so many of our little guys, especially those little guys who are busy and who are always up and running around and constantly into things. And then when their parents get them settled down and when they can hold them long enough, you just see those little bodies relax and you see them just lean back into mom. And it's so great to be able to see them have that experience together and share that experience. But that's a milestone too, and you might not have thought about that like that as well. The next one is grasp a book. So that's that the child tries to hold the book and tries to manipulate the book and use the book. And certainly this falls right in line with our what's happening in that second half of the first year as children learn how to use tools. They begin to hold their own bottles. They learn how to hold their own sippy cups. They're learning how to manipulate toys and use common objects in daily routines, even maybe learning how to brush, use a hairbrush appropriately, bring a utensil to their mouths for eating. And so you can see how this would carry over into literacy skills or pre-literacy skills as well. So they're going to learn how to hold a book. The next thing is that, again, when I share this as a literacy milestone, sometimes you might think this is a little weird, but puts book in mouth. Well, why is that a milestone? It's really just what kids do. It's what, but when they're in that 6 to 12 month developmental range. And let me tell you why I included that in this review of milestones for you. Because when we have a child who is so predominantly oral with books, meaning that all he wants to do is eat it rather than look at it or read it, that gives you some indication of where he is functioning. And so when we look at this and we think, oh, you know, what I think when I see a kid like that is, you know, he's still in that earliest developmental language learning phase. He's still right there probably under 12 months. Now, we know that mouthing and using teething toys and really anything, any kind of toy or anything in your mouth, that really is developmentally appropriate until you are about two. But after two is when we see that, or we want to see that really, really decrease. And the truth is, in lots of typically developing children, after about that 12 or 18 month level, they're not putting very many things in their mouth. So when you see a child that all he wants to do with the book is chew on it, we know, oh gosh, cognitively, he's still down in that lower developmental range. And so that's another thing that we can do sometimes. So we're wondering about, where is this child really functioning? You know, I know where I'm on the test, where the first day where I did this with mom and dad's parent report, and I looked at him, and it, you know, it wasn't a great day, and they said he can do more than I really saw, or you know, just vice versa, whatever happened. When you get down to it in therapy sessions, you can use these little milestones to really see, hey, where is this kid truly functioning? So when we see a kid who is, again, is hyperoral, meaning that, he again, everything is in his mouth and he can't do anything with the book except look at it, you're going to know that's where he's functioning developmentally, and I'm going to have to move him beyond that. And I can't look at goals that are well beyond this first level, because that's just not going to be successful. He's just not there yet. So again, as a therapist, I hope that gives you something to think about. Another thing that kids do here in this phase is that they drop or throw the book. That's their primary action. So again, if you have a child that you just can't get to look at the pictures, you're trying some of these other things, but yet you realize, when I sit back and when I really look at what he does, that's where he is with the book. And so again, I want you to think about that. And then by 10 to 12 months, children begin to enjoy looking at pictures in books. And so this is the precursor to everything else. Until we get a kid there, until he can fixate his attention on looking at the pictures and staying with the book and turning the pages, this is what we want to see in this first period. So let's talk about the language milestones that go with this. They participate in social games in this developmental period. And why is this important? It means that joint attention is being established with an adult. A child can stay with an adult and he can share that experience. And again, until the child is doing that with games like Peekaboo or Patty Cake or any other little game that you play with him, it's highly unlikely that he's going to be able to include a parent sitting behind him, holding him, reading the book, because he's just not, again, able to hold that the parent is there and the book is here and I'm going to share attention between those objects or between those two different things. And so that's why this milestone pairs so nicely with early literacy skills. And again, I've explained it a little more clearly with the next milestone that I listed here. Listens to and looks when another person talks. And again, that's what joint attention is. It's very, very difficult when you're using a book with a child and a parent is doing something like on this page labeling try and cow, pig, whatever they're doing, and the child is looking at something else or trying to get away or, again, looking at somewhere different on the page. He's not able to look at what the parent is pointing to. And, again, if a child can't direct his attention to what the parent is pointing to, it's very likely that he is going to begin to use pointing to direct someone else's attention to his own needs. And so can't you see how all these milestones just play together? And if you're a parent, you may be thinking about that for the very first time and thinking, oh no, this is so much. Oh, he's got such a long way to go. That's okay, because you are meeting him where he is, and you are going to be able to be even more successful because you realize what the real problems are now, and you've got a really, really good starting point. So that was my purpose in reviewing these milestones too. The next milestone that I wrote, I already sort of jumped ahead with that, points and uses other gestures. And we've talked about how important pointing is just for redirecting your attention. When we're, as the child, as a listener, we want him to redirect his attention and look at what we are talking to so that he can link meaning with words. So again, as we are showing him the book and we are saying truck and we are pointing to the truck, we want him to have that aha moment where he learns, hey, that's a truck. Every time she says truck, that combination of sounds, That's what she's talking about. And so again, when a child can look at a point and direct his attention to a point and keep his attention focused on that and sustain his focus, that's when he's really, really going to learn from books. Other language skills that are so important here, they're beginning to really, as I said, link meaning. So children start to understand names for very specific people and familiar objects. They follow very simple and familiar verbal directions, like when they're getting dressed, put your arm in, or give me your cup. When a parent's hand is out, they can place something in the parent's hand. So again, they're linking meaning with words. Why is that important, and what does that have to do with literacy skills? Well, again, it's pretty obvious. They are understanding what you're saying when you're talking about the picture, and they're learning from you. They're making those associations. You can see it every day that they understand more and more and more of what you're talking about. And so, again, language is based on that, what children hear. And so it's so important. They've got to be doing that and demonstrating that in their everyday routines before they're going to be able to demonstrate that with the book. The book actually makes it a little bit harder because there are pictures there, not necessarily what's the real life 3D object. And so again, until a child has those real life experiences, he needs to be learning what those words mean in context in real life before he can become symbolic by looking at that picture and linking that meaning too. So I hope that makes sense to you. The last two milestones, language milestones in this developmental period at 6 to 12 months, is that a child will begin to imitate familiar actions and even words. And again, children don't imitate words and sounds until they've learned how to imitate easier, earlier things. And it always starts non-verbally with actions. And so we're going to talk about that, how important that is, and how to get that going when that's not happening. Even as we're reading and even as we're using books. And the last big language milestone here is that a child begins to talk at about the 12-month period. And the official vocabulary size for a 12-month-old is 2 to 6 words. Some tests will say something like, you know, 1 or 2 words beyond mama or dada. So again, a really small set of words, but typically developing children are talking and starting to talk and have a few little words by that first birthday. So I wanted to mention that as well, because some of us as SLPs think that doesn't happen till later because we only work with kids with delays. And so we don't think about talking a lot. You know, if a parent walked up to us in the grocery store and said, hey, my 12-month child isn't talking yet, we would be tempted to say, don't worry about it and keep pushing the cart and going, because we think, oh, 12 months, that's so young, that's so little, it'll probably come. And the truth is, it probably will. But at the same time, we have to remember what the milestones are so that we don't get stuck in thinking only using what our assessment tool milestones are versus what's really happening in typical development. All right, so let's go on and review the 12 to 18 months. And this is going to be the second half of this developmental period. So what do kids do literacy-wise? They turn pages on their own. They write a picture when it's upside down so that they are looking at a book upside down. Maybe as an infant, that didn't bother them or they didn't try to correct it, but now they understand more about the world and they think that looks weird, something's wrong, and then through trial and error, they turn that book around so that they are looking at it correctly. And so that's certainly something that kids start to do in that 12 to 18 month developmental period. The next thing they do is point at pictures to indicate awareness, so not in response to a question just yet. That comes at the end of this period, and actually some assessment tools say on into the next developmental period, but a lot of kids will do it here by 18 months. They really are pointing at what you ask them to point at, but first they're just pointing. And it starts usually as a pat on the page, and then it gets more and more refined as their fine motor skills improve. And so we'll start to see that isolated index finger when they are really pointing, and then when their language skills catch up to this point, you can say things like, where's the horse? Show me the cow. Find the truck. Where's the sun? Those kinds of things. So we're going to talk about how to make all of that happen. Let's review, though, the couple that I have forgotten here, the other literacy milestones in the 12 to 18 month period. Here, they get a little bit more mature, so they resist the urge to automatically mouth the book. Now, they may still put the book in their mouths, but they're looking at it first. You can see some real intentional use. They're paying attention to the pictures. They're flipping the pages. They're doing some other things before it goes in their mouth. So you see a little bit of that delayed mouthing. You know, they do. You can see them. If you're a therapist, you've seen this before, where you see a kid that predominantly mouths, and then you start to notice, hey, he's looking at that. He's looking at that toy. He's using that toy. Same thing with a book. So that's what we want to see there. Another big milestone that we want to see here that's both literacy and language is that children begin to respond to stories and pictures by vocalizing and patting the pictures. So they're really interacting with the book. You can tell that they like the book. A lot of times parents will say, you know, I've never seen him really indicate that he likes me reading with him or that he's enjoyed that. And so it's a sweet little milestone that we see in this developmental period. Now, the language milestones here, what do we see? Well, kids start to do everything that they've done in that at the end of that 6 to 12 month period, they just do it better at 12 to 18 months. So they start following more simple directions, especially in their context, in the context of their daily routines or things they do every single day with mom and dad. So mom and dad can start to say something like, help me put your toys in the bathtub, and kids will start to do that, or close the door, or let's turn on the lights, or go throw your passy in your crib, or bring me your cup. Those kinds of things. They're following more and more of those directions. And mobility helps a lot with that too. When children are really become more proficient walkers, they can do more things. When mom says, go get your Goodnight Moon book, let's read that, they can go find their book and bring it back. Other things they're doing verbally here, they're imitating more and more. So by 18 months, children with typically developing language skills are proficient imitators. They sound like little parrots all day long. They just imitate, imitate, imitate. And that's what we want to see as SLP, so that they can really, again, learn to master those words, not only with how they say those words, but with what the words that they say mean. And next, we certainly know that by 18 months, children with typically developing language skills are saying 50 words and they are imitating short phrases. Now, for those of you who are parents, that might be a little hard to hear because you already knew your child was behind. He's already two and a half, three and a half, whatever he is, and you're hearing me say, she says that a kid at 18 months is already saying 50 words. And you probably know some kids like that. You probably have some kids of your friends that you have run into, and you think about them as just chatty patty talkers, but you haven't really realized just kind of the extent of your child's language delay. And again, I'm not here to beat you over the head with it and say, he's behind. That's not my intent. It's just to really look at what the milestones are. A lot of times parents, again, have read things off the internet that really lead them to believe that every kid talks late, or it's perfectly fine for a child not to be talking at 3, and they're going to end up and everything's just going to be fine. They're not going to have any academic problems or whatever. You know, we can't really say that without seeing a child and seeing what's going on with him, because lots of times no language at 3 means there's a significant language problem going on. So to hear a milestone like 50 words by 18 months, as SLPs, we need to keep that in our minds. A lot of times we think about that as a 24-month skill because that's when it's on our assessment. But we have to think about typical development, and by the time a skill reaches an assessment, it's because most of the typically developing kids, or most of the kids, even the slower kids, have already done that. And so the average there, again, is that 50 words by 18 months. So just wanted to make sure that we're always thinking about that. All right, so those were the milestones. So what do we do as SLPs? We've got to take those early literacy skills and take those early language milestones and mix them so that we are teaching parents how they can use books at home to help their children learn to understand and use words. And again, we can't start with the talking piece. We're not even going to talk about talking today. We're only going to talk about those pre-literacy and pre-linguistic, the things that have to happen so that a child will talk and will be able to use a book appropriately to learn academic information when he's five. And again, that doesn't happen the first day that he steps his foot into his kindergarten classroom. It starts well before that. So let's take a look at the four big goals that we can think about for this developmental period. And this is on the second sheet of your PDF handout. So if you want to take a look at that, the first one we're going to talk about is what we saw in that 6 to 12 month developmental period, is that children will demonstrate awareness and enjoyment of books. And remember, we said that comes in by 10 to 12 months, but it's okay if we are looking at a child who is three and doesn't like books, doesn't ever do anything with books, doesn't seem to care about books. The parent says he destroys every book I've ever given him. We need to start with these earliest skills, not way up where he should be chronologically. And I didn't talk about this, and this is important for parents. And as a therapist, you know this, but this is the kind of thing that you need to be explaining to parents too, in the context of your sessions. It's the difference with developmental age and chronological age. And so chronological age is what? It's the age that a child is. The number of candles on the birthday cake. Looking back to where the calendar, how old the calendar says he is. But developmental is, how does he really act? What does he really do? What does his behavior tell us? How old he is. What's his developmental age? So again, even if we have a child who's much older than this, this is where we need to start. And that's what we mean by a developmental approach. And that's how you can talk to parents about this. You can say things like, we're going to meet him where he is, even though he's 2.5. We have to start way down here with these skills that he hasn't mastered yet. And you say, the good news is once he's mastered these skills, we just hope he takes off. We just want to help him get a jump start. So we're going to go back and fill in all these other little things. And so again, that's how you talk about the difference between developmental age and chronological age. So we're going to start here at the beginning with the first literacy milestone, which is demonstrates that awareness. Like, I know how to start to read a book. I can look at the pictures. I can listen when someone else is talking to me about the book. I can, again, direct and keep my focus right there. I will, you know, for children, they're not mouthing the book immediately. They're writing the pictures when the picture is presented upside down. They are learning to turn the pages. So there are lots of things that happen first. And so we have to make sure that children have done that. So what are some things that we can do to make that easier? And again, these are things that you need to be thinking about as a therapist when you're planning your sessions, especially with our kids who are a little lower functioning developmentally. We need to make sure that we are adapting our materials so that, again, we're getting at that just right place so that they can really, really learn, and our strategies are the most effective they can be for teaching language. So what do we want to do? Well, first of all, we want to use books with simple pictures or illustrations. Now, a lot of times I've talked to parents about, oh, we only want to use books with photographs, and this is more like real life. And but when we do that, we really limit a child's we limit the number of books that we're going to be able to expose a child to, because there's so much wonderful literature for children with beautiful, beautiful illustrations like Little Blue Truck. It's not a book of photographs or real life pictures, but oh my goodness, the illustrations are just gorgeous and so lifelike anyway. But so then you want to talk to parents about just making sure that the pictures are simple enough for a child to be able to pick out objects. So here, certainly this book would qualify. We can find a truck, we can find birds, we can find the stop sign, we can find the tree. So that's certainly what we mean by that. The other thing that we started talking about, the positioning before, with how regulatory it is for a child to have that body-on-body contact and be able to sit in an adult's lap and just be, again, just relax into them and be connected with them physically, again, sometimes helps children listen better. But sometimes with our little guys, it is better to be across from them so that we can see their little faces, so that we can read their cues better, so that we can help with joint attention. Remember with joint attention, we talked about that's being able to share an experience. So there's no better indication of that than when a child is looking at us. And sometimes it's a little awkward when we're holding them and they're trying to look up at us and look back. But I love it when that happens, because that's not as easy for a kid to do. And when he's doing it, we know that he really, really he really gets it, and he's really mastered joint attention. But for some of our little guys, we do need to be across from them so that we can read them and so they can read us and get eye contact going and all of that. And so you'll just need to see what makes a difference with that. A lot of times with kids, if they have not responded to, let's say that they don't like being held, and usually that's just kind of an initial thing, but they just brisk at that. And so for those kids, well, you're not going to make them sit in your lap. For those kids, you just sit across from them. What I like to do in a therapy situation is have a kid up on a couch or a chair at home, and I'm on the floor. So I'm sitting on my legs or even sometimes up on my knees so I can be eye to eye level with him. And then we have the book just right between us. So he's looking at the book, but it's not a big jump for him to be able to shift his eye gaze up a little bit and look at me as I'm pointing and showing and reading or talking about the picture. So that's certainly something that we want to do. Our main strategy here, again, through all of this is just going to be labeling pictures as we point to them. And so you're going to have to model that as a therapist sometimes. And, you know, it's hard for parents to be able to do this sort of on demand. And so you want to, as a therapist, be as gentle and as helpful as you can. But sometimes observation-wise, you just sort of want to see what a parent already does. And that's great. But we have to remember there's always an element of performance anxiety when that happens, just like it is with you when you're going into a new situation. I don't know if you still get scared the first time that you're meeting a family or the first time that you're in a new situation. And I will say that that's gotten a lot better for me over the years. But I still get a rush like, oh, what's going to happen? How's this really going to be? You know, just that, again, sometimes it's excitement, but sometimes it really does lean over to that nervousness or that anxiety. And parents do that too. They're afraid to perform in front of you and to do the things that they do. And so, again, if you are trying to look at a parent really, really assess what they're doing, give them a break, just like you hope that people will give you a break as you are demonstrating what you know. And as you get more comfortable with them and they get more comfortable with you, you're going to get to see more of that. But again, as we're watching sometimes in those first few sessions, it's just a little awkward for everybody. So be kind when you're talking with parents about just kind of tweaking what they can do. So that's what I wanted to say about that. All right, so as we are talking about these books, you know, of course we're not going to say to a parent, hey, don't bother reading the book because your child doesn't have the language skills to process it anyway. We would never say that. But for some parents, they need to know it's okay. You don't have to read the story, because when we do tell them to read the story, you know, with a book like, you know, Little Blue Truck is just the book that I had on top. So it's the one that I'm going to use until we get to these next examples. But, you know, they may think that reading the books is saying horn went beep, engine purred, friendliest sounds you've ever heard. You know, how blah and how boring is that? So you've got to really model to them how to read it with heightened affect. Horn went beep, engine purred, friendliest sounds you've ever heard. So talk to them about being melodic and how children really learn language from that. Talk to them about how when they use words like beep, beep, that they can not necessarily read that word, but use it more like an exclamatory word with heightened affect so that their child's, it pulls their attention, pulls that child's attention to them. So talk about that. And you also might say to a parent, and this is where I was going with this, you don't even have to read the book. If your child is in this developmental phase and this is what he wants to do, we just want him to look at the pictures and enjoy the book. And so you don't even have to read the story yet. Just point out the pictures and you model that for them. Say, this is what you could say. You could say, oh, let's find a truck. Where's that truck? Truck right there. Beep, beep. Beep, beep. And you do some things like that and say, that might be all you do on that page, Mom. If he wants to move on, move on. But if he's still looking, point to the bird and talk about something with the bird. Say, look, that bird can fly. Look, bye-bye, bird. Or whatever Mom wants to say. And so help parents really know how they can most effectively direct their child's attention to the book. For some kids, it is reading. But for most of our guys, it's going to be labeling and pointing to the pictures to really help direct that child's attention there. The other thing that you want to do is, and again, this is starting with our receptive language strategies, is just provide a simple explanation and for the pictures. And so they're not just saying bird, water or road, stop sign, tree, truck. They don't really need to do that. They need to maybe provide a little explanation or just say something, or even something like that little sound that I did with truck, with beep, beep. And so model with them how to do it, and so they can see you do it, and really talk about how their child responds. You might say, have you noticed when you read that he sort of checks out? And we don't want him to do that. We want this book to be just the most effective way for you to help him learn how to stick with you and how to listen to you. And so when you're reading these words, I'm not sure he's paying as much attention to you as when you point and when you talk about it and when you sound real playful. So direct parents' efforts like that. So what do you do in this phase if they're not attending, if you're not getting a lot of participation there? We always think with these kids that you've got to make it simpler. You've always got to pull it back because it's still probably too hard. And that's all right. And again, that's just where the child is. So talk with parents about that, how to make it simpler so that if they have been reading, they do more labeling. The other thing we want to be sure that we're doing here in this developmental phase is working on those things that as SLPs we wouldn't necessarily think about because it's not as language based as we would think about. So these are more like cognitive skills and fine motor skills. So again, turning the book, make sure that a child starts to notice that the book is upside down. So you might say something like, wow, what's wrong? What's wrong with that book? Oh, look. That's better. Or whatever you want to say. You might say fix the book or turn it the right way, whatever feels more natural to you. But again, set up some situations like that. Help a child who maybe has the motor coordination issues be able to turn the pages in the book and get things going in that way. So that first little goal, you won't have to do that with every kid, but for the kids who need it and you skip it, it delays their progress even more because you're not meeting them where they are. So look at your information on your handout with different ideas that you could do with that. Again, we're going to be simpler. Set up situations for a child to practice those skills like turning pages and writing the book and just, again, the joint attention piece. And then experiment with times of day or positioning. If mom says he falls asleep every time I read him the book at bedtime, I can't use it that way. Say, you've already figured it out. You need to be doing that maybe in conjunction with snack time or just at a different time of the day so that he can stay awake and he doesn't snuggle in quite so much that he gets so comfortable that he falls asleep. And so help a parent kind of work through those things. So let's talk. Let me give you two examples for books here that have worked so great. I've already talked about Little Blue Truck and how much I love this book, and they've got a whole little series of books. And I have a cute video about Little Blue Truck that I did several years ago about Christmas, and I'll try to remember to link it there. It's the Christmas edition of Little Blue Truck, where you can look at how to use toys with books. We're going to talk about that in part two of this series, but I wanted to mention how much I like this series. But again, listening and participating is the first goal. Help a parent decide if they're going to read the book or if they're just going to focus on labeling and pointing to the pictures. Remember that kids are not pointing at the pictures just yet. So talk to your parent about that. Like, you know, whoa. We're not there yet. This is where you're just pointing and you are doing the preliminary work to get him ready for this. The other thing that you can do for kids who haven't really been into books, and this is primarily an independent activity, so when children are left alone, what to do. These sensory books are really, really wonderful because they encourage interaction with the book. And I'm not talking about sound books, although we will talk about a sound book in just a minute and how you can use that. And sometimes the pictures are just so good and it really will hook a kid's attention. But if you don't have to use it, don't. Try to do other things first so that the child doesn't get stuck in a self-stim pattern of just that repetitive button pushing. But for these little wonderful books, this is a new book that I've just gotten. It's a Roger Pretty book, and I just love his books because the illustrations and photographs of real objects and real people, real things, are just so beautiful. But it's got so many textures. And again, for kids who haven't interacted with books very much, or let's just say they've only had electronic toys and you're really trying to pull them away from that, these are some good options. And when I do these with a kid, you know, a lot of times I don't talk very much other than just to say something, you know, use some exclamatory sounds like, you know, ooh, as we're, you know, reading this together and looking at the book together, and just to get them interested in the book. And let me mention, too, that I'm going to link a post with all of the example books that I'm doing the demo with today right there in the description, so that if you want to look at some of these specific books, you can certainly do that. All right, so again, our main strategy here was in this first period was labeling pictures and helping children demonstrate those skills that aren't necessarily language yet, those pre-literacy skills like turning the pages, writing the picture, and keeping your attention focused on the book and on the reader, so if someone else is there with them. So really getting that joint attention going. So let's talk about skill number two, and this is where a child begins to point for awareness. So we're not there to the point where we are quizzing him or asking him for specific responses. We just want him using his little finger. And remember, why do we do this? Because this is what comes first. And not every kid will need this. Some kids are going to automatically know how to point, and they point already. For them, it's just going to be getting them to intentionally identify pictures, which we're going to get to that goal, but we're not there yet. And for a kid who can't do that yet, and especially for our little guys with global developmental delays, or our little guys who have some motor issues as well, low tone, high tone, or maybe even some motor planning issues, pointing is harder for those kids. And so you have to work on some of those things first. And so the main thing that parents need to do here is just to model pointing. Pardon me. And my very best tip with this is to tap where you want the child to point. Now, I just got my nails done yesterday, so they're not as long as they have been. You can't maybe necessarily hear that tap, but if a kid were here with me, he would, and that gets their attention every single time. Now, I have a whole podcast with specific tips and strategies for teaching children how to point. It's podcast number 384, if you want to take a look at that. And we're not going to repeat all those strategies, but for some kids, you're going to need that focus practice. So let me show you some of the books that I use, and we'll talk about the strategies that we do as we go with these book demos. This is a really cute book called Press Here. I've had several parents tell me about it, and it's such a simple book, and it's one that even as an SLP, you may not have heard about or used with your own children, but it's really just a book of dots. And you can read the story right here, but what you're really doing is just teaching a child how to place his finger at a specific point on the page. And so I love it for that, and I've seen some kids who really, really like this, and they get really fascinated with just touching the dots, and guess what happens? You've got a pointer. You now have a child who can point. So it's a really, really great book for that. If kids can't do that with a book like this, where you focused on it, you showed them how to do it, you've done some tapping, you've helped them isolate their little finger, they may just need some more of that. There's some other books that we use for this too. I love this polka dot book series, and a family introduced me to this last year, and the mom said, I just bought this on a whim when I was walking through Lowe's, and I was there for something else, and I just saw this, and I remembered how you told me that we needed to work on pointing with him, and Hudson had not been pointing, and I got this book, and Laura, it has just worked like magic. And so I immediately went to Lowe's and bought my own book. But this book is really cool because when you point, did you hear that? When you push the dot, it makes a little pop. So it's good feedback. I don't know if you can hear that on the video, but it's all throughout the book, and kids who need that specific help learning how to point. And so you'll let them just play with the book like this and learn how to point, but I start immediately wanting to shape that behavior. So I talk to parents about, as he's pointing, you say, where's the zebra? There's zebra. And so you go ahead and get them in the habit of pointing to what you're asking them to do. And as he's about to poke the dot, you say, leopard, there's the leopard. Yes, you pointed to the leopard. And so do that through the book. And again, are you really training the language with this at this point? Probably not, but it helps to go ahead and pair the word with it so that he's hearing it and he starts to understand, oh, she's saying something every time that I'm touching it. Where's the monkey? You know, pop right there. So great book for that. Another book that I like to use, or kind of theory here with books, and I'll show you three different books that we work on this with. It's something that an OT taught me years ago, and she said, Laura, you know, when kids aren't pointing, and this was when she and I were sharing a child, and she said, when kids aren't pointing, you know, yeah, you're thinking about it as a language skill and as a cognitive skill, and you're looking at it like that, but a lot of times for me, I really start with the physical part so that I can kind of tease it out, and I want to make sure that a child has the prerequisite skills to be able to isolate his index finger to point. And so she introduced me to working on things like pincer grasp. And again, we know that. We know that as an SLP. We know that kids have to be able to do that. We think about that being on the test, but we don't necessarily connect it to a kid has to be able to do this with a pincer grasp before he can really isolate his finger to point. And so for some kids, like with low muscle tone, let's say you have a little guy with Down syndrome that has extremely low muscle tone. You may be working with books with him just on supporting his emerging pincer grasp. And I didn't bring my Cheerios today, but the point with this little book is that you've got the Cheerios here that match and mirror what the on every page. And so you can place those in there, but what my OT friend did and what I've done since then is you put the Cheerios already there as the parent. You know, every time you turn the page, you place the Cheerios in the appropriate spot and let a child pick it up, and then eventually he's going to be able to put it back in. But start with that picking it up. That's like deconstruction, isn't it? We start at the end with those things. So these Cheerio books are great for that. And remember, I'm linking all these books in the post. So go to the post that'll say something like, you know, post with the book link so that you can see that. The other thing that she really taught me is that once a kid has a pincer grasp like that, then you really need to work on sometimes, you know, them using their fingers. So things like sliding, so books that emphasize that. So this is a little Guess Who book, and they slide it over. You're asking a question like, who's singing in the tree? And then it's a little bird. And so this is a cute little book to use. But on every page, the child puts his finger in the circle and slides it over. So that helps him strengthen that musculature and then learn to move that little finger. And you're certainly redirecting his efforts. Here's another little book, Slide and Find Animals. I think this is a Scholastic book. So I ordered this from like a school book sale. But other kinds of, you know, you're still working on language here too, because you're pointing out, oh, there's the frog. Bye-bye, frog. Wow, fish. And so talk to parents, even as they're working on the physical part of pointing, they're still using language and still layering their language and helping their child with that. My favorite way to work on the sliding thing, or when we're isolating that, is with Brown Bear, with this great edition of that. And this book, again, you're going to go through and have the pages already preset where a child is just sliding over what he's going to see. So again, you know, you can probably quote this with me if you are an SLP. Red bird, what do you see? I see a yellow duck looking at me. And then the child's job is to move the slot over. So I love this book. Have had great success with this book for kids who I call them pre-pointers. We're teaching them how to point, but they're not quite there yet. They need to learn how to manipulate the book and use their little fingers specifically. So this is a great book to do that with. All right, so that is goal number two, pointing for awareness. And if you have a child who requires more than that, you need some more tips, don't forget to go back and listen to podcast 384 and watch that video for some great tips to get that going. Let's move on to the third goal here, and this is just my favorite, and honestly, this is where I start with most kids when I'm using books with kids. And again, this might not be for every kid that we start with this with, but it certainly is, you know, if they have more global issues, like I said before, they're not pointing, they're not looking at the book, they're not writing pictures or showing that they understand really how to read a book, you start there. But this is where we start with a lot of kids in therapy. So I wanted to mention these books and this goal, and it's completing simple actions with books. And this is, we would expect kids to be able to do this when they're in the 12 to 15 month developmental phase. And so again, this second part of where we've talked about. We've gotten that awareness going. They're using their little hands and pointing. You can tell, again, their joint attention is right there with you with the book. Now let's bump it up a little bit. So let's make this a little more difficult. And again, we're not to the point where we're saying, where's the baby? Show me the car. Find the shoes. We're not there yet. We want kids really interacting a little bit better. And so if you have a kid who can't do that yet, who can't do those kinds of things, back up to this point. And this is a really fun therapy goal too, because kids really get into it and parents love it. And again, it's such a nice way to teach them how to make a connection with books. So what we're going to do here is just choose a book with characters that a child likes, or again, big, simple pictures, and you're just going to have them interact with the book. So it might be something like, oh, look at that baby. Kiss the baby. Let's kiss the baby. Mwah. And you are modeling that for them. You are showing them. You're not saying kiss the baby, tickle the baby, pet the baby. You're doing it with them. And again, you're sharing that experience. So model that for them and just give them a simple action. You can do, sometimes if a kid, you might, whatever book you might use, this is a counting book, and it's a much better way to use a counting book than teaching numbers. But if a kid likes just one particular page, stay right there and see if you can get him to do two or three little actions. Now, at the beginning, if you've never had a child do this, he's not going to be able to imitate 10 different things that you try to get him to do. But we hope for two or three things. And we hope for, as you do a whole book like this, that you get him, work him up to the point where he's gradually imitating 7 or 10 actions per book. But again, don't get too carried away at the beginning. And what I mean by carried away is don't set yourself up for failure and have unrealistic expectations. So you just want them to do one or two simple little actions per page. And again, you can look for some ideas there on your handout. But pat the baby, kiss the baby, hug the baby, tickle the baby, rock the baby, or something like if you have a picture with a door, knock on the door, or honk the car's horn, or anything like that where they are touching the picture and doing something that you have modeled for them, that you have shown them how to do. So a baby book is a really good idea, because kids are super, super into that. And remember, kids, even if they're 3 or 4, but they're still in this 12 to 18 month developmental period, chances are, they may like Spider-Man or something better, and you can use that. You can use whatever their interests are. But pictures of babies are really, really enticing for most children, even when they're older toddlers. So that's a tip too, if you're not having much luck with books, with getting them to imitate with books. Babies and animals always tend to work very well with that. So give them some directions, and model those little actions so that they can do that with you. Let me show you another couple of books that I do it with. Here's what I like to do. And I just bought this book last week. I bought it when I bought the other pretty book that I mentioned too. And here's how I'm going to use this. I've already gone through it, pardon me, and thought, okay, what can I do on this page and what can I do on this page? And so this little book is so great for that, because it's a see, touch, and feel book, so a sensory book. So it already has some little things that parents don't have to think so hard. So when there's a little piece here of the teddy bear's furry tummy, mom is just going to say, rub the bear or pat the bear. And so that might help some parents with that. So think about what you can do is you can look at some of your books. And even as a parent now, take out some of your books that your child likes and think, what can I do with this? And just go through it. And so for this one, I was thinking, for this book, my obvious thing is going to be kiss the baby, because she's just so engaging. Her mouth is open. I think that's going to really attract a child's attention. And then, pat the bear here. And then maybe on this leaf page, I don't know, we might do something like blowing there. Let's blow the leaves. And then here for the babies, this baby's clapping, so maybe we would model clapping on that page, and we would say something like, look at that baby. Oh, that baby's clapping. See, clap, clap, and model it. And then if a child doesn't do it, reach over and help him do it. That's part of the tell him, show him, help him. So get that going. For this page, what would you do? I would probably say, give baby 5, or wave. Baby's waving. Let's wave. And so, again, you can work on lots of these early gestures. and other kinds of skills that you would be working on too. But certainly just help a parent walk through a book like this, look through the book, and see what you could do. Even maybe make some notes for some parents who might need that, or for whom this approach is going to be brand new and they're going to need some special help with. So what if you can't get a kid to do that? What are some troubleshooting things you can do? Well, pick some different books so that you can have a little bit more to work with. So there are going to be some books that are already designed for this kind of purpose. So that classic children's book, Pat the Bunny, walks you through this with you know, we're going to pat the bunny in this book. You know, now you pat the bunny. Let's play peekaboo. And so, again, you can read through this with the child and with a parent and show them all the different ways that you can get them to imitate. And how I like to use Pat the Bunny is show a parent this kind of thing and say, you know, we can do this with books that have our specific instructions, but we can also do it with other books that don't tell us exactly how to do that. And so help a parent sort of walk through that too. Other things that you might want to do, I like this little book, and here's a trick. You do the same action with the book all the way through. So what's your action with this Never Feed a Shark book? You're going to have the kid stick his hand in the mouth for every page. And so what do you do when he's not participating? That's on you. You've got to make that a lot more fun. So for this kind of book with a kid, when I'm getting him to stick his hand in there, I'm going to pretend like I'm biting him every time. I might even try to get my face on the other side of that. You know, so I'm biting him as he's, or pretending, as he's sticking his hand through there. And can you see how engaging that would be for a child who doesn't really like books? So that's certainly something you can do, is change your materials. One other thing I like to do here with books, with kids who aren't hanging with me and who don't necessarily like it, is pick something they do like. So if they're a child who loves music, I'm going to get some books that have the theme of a song. So Five Little Monkeys Jumping on the Bed. And so let's say that he doesn't normally like to look at the pictures with me. I'm going to do what he likes to do. So I'm singing with him and trying to keep his attention as we look at this together. Maybe we could do some hand motions together. I don't know what your library of books looks like, but if you don't have any books with songs, you may want to get that, because that can really hook a kid who loves music and doesn't necessarily love books. So that's a great idea to try too. Some other things you could do here. Let's talk about what to do if a kid, say, still continues to mouth it. And you want him to look at the pages, but he's still obsessed with that. Again, you've got to go back to that first developmental stage and make sure that he's got all those other little skills coming in. But maybe you just go ahead and address those oral issues. Maybe you have a snack while you're eating. I've done that with a lot of kids who tend to want to do that, and I can help them and keep them on task with that, you know, as we're looking at the book. And we're going to talk about reinforcing some of these skills on the next show when we really get into the receptive language pieces and expressive language pieces. But for those kinds of kids, you know, it might be more ABA-like, that they're looking at a page and you might give them a little Smartie, whatever their, you know, their little candy, whatever candy they like, an M&M, a cracker, something, just to give them something to do with their mouths while they are looking at the book with you. So that's certainly something you can do. Another thing that I've found that worked great, and I've done another therapy tip of the week about this years and years ago, is to modify a book to give a child something that he can do, that kind of one action that we talked about before. Something he can do with the pictures. Now, this is Muba La La La. I love this little book, a Sandra Boynton book, and I've used it. I bet I made this 5 years ago, 7 years ago. And that's the thing about being able to modify some of these therapy materials or books. You think that's going to take me a lot of time. I don't necessarily want to do that. But then you have it forever and can use it with lots and lots of children, loaning out to families. You know, your activity is just ready to go. So what do you do with this book? Well, again, this is going to be for a kid who maybe doesn't have great attention. You need to hook his attention to stay there. It might be a kid who's really working on fine motor skills, who likes books, that you think this is a way that we can get this additional practice in, and he likes books, so he's going to stay with me. And I'm teaching the language piece. He's learning to listen. We're working on joint attention. And so here, what do? You just copy the page and then print it and laminate it. Pardon me. Stick a little Velcro dot on the back and a Velcro dot on the page of the book, so that the child's action here is to pull it off. And for a lot of my little guys that are working on again, staying with me, and that's our big goal, was just staying together and us doing the same thing at the same time. This is a great activity for that, and you're working in the pre-literacy skills too. And you're reading, you know, A Sheep Says Baa, and you're having kids, you know, after you read it, they pull off the picture, and three singing pigs say la, la, la. And they pull off too. You can also put the pictures back on. And our little guys who are sensory seekers love this part with putting the Velcro dot back on and then really smushing that picture back. And that kind of keeps them with you. And they'll listen to the book and stay with you. And again, why are you doing this? Are you tricking a child into reading a book? No, you're building their skills. After a while, they learn they're going to stay with you, pull the pictures off. Eventually, you don't have to use the pictures with the book because they're staying with you and they've learned that they like books. And you've made it so fun that they want to sit there with you and they're really learning. And again, that's the purpose for books. Now, another thing you can do here with this imitating actions with books is really make this a group activity. And I have had this work so well that I can't even believe it has worked so well with kids who may not do a ton of this imitating with me, but then we bring in a brother or a sister, or we bring in a peer in maybe a preschool or a daycare situation, and then they are trying to do what their little friends are doing, and you, again, you've made it more fun because it's a group thing. So you get a little book to use for peer modeling where everybody's doing the same thing. So this little Elmo book, Elmo says, touch your nose, and so then we all touch our nose, and you make a big deal about it. You don't just say, like I read it then, Elmo says, touch your nose. You don't do that. You say, Elmo says, touch your nose. Look, look, your nose. And really amp it up and really go for it and really model that so that a child then is imitating you. And he's also learning to interact with the book and imitate those actions in the book. And you also want the other children doing it too. And again, that's what I mean by peer modeling. A child sees other children and they all want to do it. But you've got to be super into it so that you give them something to imitate. So the little books that I use for this, I've used an Elmo books for this. Shake a Leg is another little Elmo book that I've used for a long time. This picture, this little book, I found that I gave this. We let one of our children, who's now 31, give it to one of our other children, who's turning 29, for Valentine's Day. And so that's how classic these little books are and how well these ideas have worked. I mean, they're just really tried and true with that. So take a look at some of these little books. One of my favorite ones is Eric Carl from Head to Toe, where it's there's a little bit older material here because we're imitating zoo animals and not a Sesame Street character. For some of your little guys who you think might be turned off by Elmo, Eric Carl's book is really great. You know, I am a penguin and I turn my head. Can you do it? And so then everybody is modeling how to turn their heads. And then you can also get the little verbal response or choral response where everybody says, I can do it. And sometimes you can get that going with a little group of kids. But again, we're not talking about talking yet. You're not wanting the child that you are working on these very basic literacy and language skills to talk yet. That's unrealistic. It's great if it happens, but your goal here needs to just be imitating what you do, what's in the book, and what the other kids do. So that was our goal number three. I hope I've given you some good ideas to get started on that if you've never done that kind of work before or worked on that kind of objective. The last goal in this phase, and we're going to talk about it just a little bit today, but we're really going to talk about it a lot in next week's show, and it's identifying pictures on request. And some assessment tools have this in the closer to the 18-month range. Some have it down at 12 to 15 months, and some have it as late as 24 months, identifying familiar pictures on request. So this is finally to the point where we say, where's the car? Show me the baby. Find the tree. Whatever it is, so that the child is listening to what you say and then pointing. And can you see how we've worked up to three big goals before now? And how some parents might not even start there. They might start with a book and their only focus is, what's that? And they want the child to say butterfly. Or, you know, what's that, you know, owl or bird or whatever their child would say. And so you've got to really talk to parents too about how all the, there's so many things that come first, and talk about that progression of, and that development of skills. And so for this kind of goal, we are going to pick just a really simple picture book, because if children can't do it with a bigger book, like we talked about before, say something like, let's just look at this Barney book, where we're saying, you know, find the little boy's shoes. They're not going to be there yet. We're going to be asking for bigger targets, like, you know, where's the horse? Or this may not even be the best kind of book to start with. I like it because of the pictures, but the vocabulary might be too advanced. And I like this too, when we're giving a child a 50% shot of getting it right. There are only two pictures there. And certainly you can use those early receptive language goals or focus there. You can use that with any kind of book. But when a child is really, really having difficulty with it, we always need to make it simpler, and we always need to back up to where we think it can be successful. So a book like this with really clear, simple photographs is going to be the way to go. All right, so next time I'm going to give you even more tips for working on receptive language with a child, but this gets us through that receptive language with a child with a book, but this gets us through that first developmental period there at 18 months. So I hope I've taught you some new things today and some new ways to use books, especially for children who may not necessarily like books yet. Kids who were in the exhibiting those problems that we talked about at the beginning. Their attention looks short. Well, why is that? It's because they don't really understand what you're asking them to do. You're working at a level that's too high, so you're going to back up to there. Or it could be that a kid that we talked about before is completely self-stimulatory with the book. That's because he hasn't really, again, settled in enough with your other sensory strategies to really look at the book and look at the pictures. And so you've got to get some joint attention going first. And so this is actually harder to me than the strategies that we're going to talk about in next week's show, but think about this and think about how you can use this with kids where you might not have been successful in the past, and this is just going to, again, pave the way for the receptive and expressive strategies that we'll talk about in next week's show. All right, if you want the written explanation of the strategies that we talked about, remember that you can get your CE credit and the great handout for $5. Look at the link there below. It's to my website at Teach Me to Talk, and you can buy the credit for the show and get the handout there. You can also get this information from my therapy manual called Let's Talk About Talking, and it actually looks at the 11 skills that all toddlers master when they begin to talk, whether they talk on time or whether they're late talkers. And so check out that book at the link in the post below. All right, that's it. That's all for today. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech language pathologist, and thank you so much for joining me for Teach Me to Talk, the podcast.